Blog Talk Radio.
Conspiracies, cover-ups, news they don't want you to know. Only on the Cosmic Horizons Radio Show, hosted by James Harp.
World, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
Conspiracy Journal is your number one source for the hidden world of the weird and strange. We bring you thought-provoking and controversial material for free-thinking individuals who are seeking what is really going on in our world today. Some of this material may adversely affect you. Other pieces are meant to enlighten. Either way, be prepared to be intrigued by such things as the reality of UFOs, ghosts, strange creatures from time and space, hidden conspiracies, time travel, Nikola Tesla, suppressed technology, and a whole lot more. You can find out more by visiting our website at conspiracyjournal.com. There you can sign up for our free weekly newsletter sent directly to your email address. Find out what they don't want you to know.
Welcome to another eye-popping edition of Cosmic Horizons Radio, streaming out live to the world and beyond from our studios just north of Toronto, Ontario, Canada. We have a brief hiatus, and we're just returning back to the airways. I believe this is our first broadcast this year, and with our first broadcast, I'd like to welcome author Tim Swartz of the Conspiracy Journal, and we're talking UFOs and aliens on today's show. The lines are open. You can call us at 845-277-9135 or join us in a real-time chat. So I'd like to welcome Tim to the show. Welcome, Tim.
Hi, James. It's great to be back with you again.
It's so great hearing your voice again. First show back for you for a while.
Yeah, I was just trying to think when the last time that you had me on your show, but it doesn't matter. We're here today, and as always, I always look forward to having a fascinating conversation with you.
Thank you, and I heard you there the other night last week on my colleague Richard Serrett's show right here in Toronto.
Yeah, this I've been on Richard's show a couple of times now, and I was trying to remember now what was it that we were talking about. I've done a lot of shows recently, James. It just seems like that I'm on one and then I get five more calls to do more. So it's an interesting time right now, I tell you.
Well, I'd like to ask you how you're making out with this pandemic. You and your family, everything's okay?
We're doing well. It's hard to believe. I mean, it's almost a year now. I think it'll be a year next week when we had to start staying in place. My wife started working from home in her little makeshift office, and of course, I mean, I've had my office and have worked out of my house for a long time, so it really wasn't a big change for me and my daughter. We decided to go ahead and allow her to take e-learning that our local school system started offering. So, I actually had my first shot on Thursday, and so far no adverse reactions, no hair growing out of my body in weird places, and no howling at the full moon or anything like that. So I think everything's good.
So we'll get on to your latest publication, Alien Lives Matter. But what's your opinion of this so-called vaccine? Do you think this whole thing was a man-made virus, or that's just the way different people think under these circumstances?
I sincerely doubt that it's a man-made virus. From everything that I've read and have researched on, this is a real virus that has emerged from the wilds, as they call it. It's a SARS variation that has probably been around for quite some time, but it wasn't until recently that it made that jump from bats, probably through some other creature, say like I think they were saying like a pangolin or something, something like that, and then jumped into humans. I mean, we see that happening all the time. I mean, the regular variations of the flu that happen every year usually starts in ducks or pig farms, things like that. The Spanish flu, that probably started, they think, from a pig farm in Kansas, even though that the first cases were they were realized in Spain. That's where it got the name the Spanish flu, but probably it originated from the United States. You know, the SARS coronavirus, it was probably the same situation. I mean, it started out from the wild, and I have read the suggestions that this may have been a laboratory variation that that somebody was studying, and maybe it was fritzing around with the genes, and then it got loose. But as far as anybody can tell so far. And there are ways that you can tell if you're dealing with a virus that has been manipulated in the laboratory, because they have basically what are called templates that they use to work with the genetic structure of these viruses. And as far as anybody can tell, it doesn't look like that it was manipulated, which is probably a good thing, because more than likely, if we had to deal with a virus that had been manipulated in the laboratory, it probably would be a lot worse than what we're seeing with coronavirus. I mean, it's pretty bad, but fortunately, it's not 100% fatal to anybody that gets infected. And if anybody's going to be manipulating a virus in a laboratory, they're looking to weaponize it, to make it fatal to anybody who catches it.
Well, on a positive note, you've been a busy man. Can you talk a little bit about your recent publication, Alien Lives Matter, and It's Okay to Be Gray? I like that. It's Okay to Be Gray. You collaborated with Timothy Green Beckley, Sean Castile, and over a dozen independent researchers. Can you tell me what inspired you guys to write this book at this present time?
Oh yeah, sure. Well, this book came from Timothy Green Beckley. He was the one who came up with the idea for it, and probably the one person that was brave enough to actually go with a title like that. Because I know that myself and Sean Castile at first, you have to admit, I mean, we were a little bit hesitant. With that title, because we didn't want people thinking that we were trying to either make fun or make light or dismiss the Black Lives Matter movement that was going on at around the time that Tim Beckley came up with this title. But I can see the reasoning that he used, because throughout the history of UFOs and whatever the intelligence is behind them, there has been a back and forth with suggestions that at times these encounters can end up being hostile, not just hostile on the extraterrestrial intelligence towards people, but the other way around as well. There have been numerous accounts over the years of people attacking UFOs and their occupants. Lots of stories of people shooting at UFOs, lots of stories about people attacking the strange beings that have been seen coming out of these crafts. So that's I think that's one of the reasons that that Tim Beckley went with the title Alien Lives Matter, It's Okay to Be Gray, because it for whatever the intelligence is behind UFOs, interactions with humans can be hazardous to their health. But as well, on top of that, there is a pretty big section in the book. This is something that Tim Beckley and I have discussed, with others over the years, because there is this incorrect notion that the African American community doesn't have UFO experiences, isn't interested in UFOs, and that's completely false. I mean, I think that there is a what would it be, like a Caucasian conceit that UFOs is strictly within their territory, and I have to admit it that there are people who have been part of some of the major UFO research organizations who have been downright hostile to African Americans, not only in general, but those who have wanted to become involved in investigation and research, and with those who have had UFO experiences. I mean, you look at Betty and Barney Hill. Betty Hill was white and Barney Hill was black, and they were married in the early 1960s, when such marriages throughout much of the country was looked down upon and with a lot of places treated with hostility. And after they had their UFO abduction, they really did. They received a lot of hostility and a lot of criticism from people, because how dare they have an experience with the unknown? That seemed to be the conceit that was going on with a lot of researchers, that they weren't going to touch their report with a 10-foot pole because Barney Hill was black. And fortunately, those kinds of attitudes, I guess, at least publicly, there are still a lot of people who have them, but aren't as quick to reveal their attitudes right out loud and in public. Fortunately, those kinds of attitudes have gone by the wayside, and we've seen a lot more people from the African American community become actively involved in researching UFOs and really contributing to help all of us get a better grasp and understanding of what could be going on.
And if I'm not mistaken, Muhammad Ali's had over 21 sightings when he was alive. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. Yeah, Muhammad Ali was very interested in the whole UFO study. There was he had one experience where he actually drew. Did a very good drawing that Timothy Green Beckley published in his in the book Alien Lives Matter, and throughout most of his life, Muhammad Ali was one of the ones that was very public in talking about his experiences and his willingness to, you know, go public with his beliefs and his experiences. And, you know, if anybody dared to try to debunk him or to call him crazy or anything like that, well, you know how that would come out, somebody like Muhammad Ali. He was one of many had these unusual experiences and was not afraid to talk about it. You know, that was the great thing about him. I guess at that point in his career, it didn't matter what other people would think about his interests and some of the things that had happened to him.
Well, just recently talking about President Connors, back in February 21st of this year, it was American Airlines Flight 2292 between Cincinnati and Phoenix saw a strange cylinder-like object that was fully visible to the pilot. Now it's just over close to New Mexico, just a few miles the other side of Des Moines, Iowa. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about that recent encounter? Because that was just like 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very good case. It happened on February 21st. 2021, and it was American Airlines Flight 2292, which was Airbus A320, and it, as you said, it was flying between Cincinnati and Phoenix, and the aircraft was up at 36,000 feet cruising altitude, and actually, we found out about this case because we had this guy by the name of Steve Douglas, who he's a radio interceptor a hobbyist. And what he does is that, you know, he listens and he records scanner traffic between aircraft and the towers, and not only civilian, but military aircraft as well. But this was a civilian aircraft, and it happened at around 1:19 Central Time when Steve Douglas intercepted this conversation between the pilot and the tower. And the pilot radioed the tower and wanted to know, says, do you have any targets up here? We just had something go right over the top of us. And then he said, I hate to say this, but it looked like a long cylinder-shaped object, almost like a cruise missile type of thing. Mm-hmm. He said it was moving really fast, and it went over the top. Now, the tower replied that they did not have anything else on their radar in that area. They checked. There was no military aircraft presented in the area, and everybody was left baffled by what actually happened. And of course, the aircraft continued to its destination with no problems. Now, this one site called The War Room, which does a really good job at reporting these kinds of unusual encounters between civilian aircraft and UFOs, they, going through the files with the aircraft that was in the area, they found that there was a Learjet in the general area of that aircraft, but it was still, I think they said it was about it was traveling about 5,000 feet above the Airbus. But it actually was about an angle of 8 miles in distance from the Airbus, and didn't go over the Airbus, and neither was it close enough for the pilots to see it and worry about it, because you know as well as I do that, you know, you have something that doesn't show up on your radar fly over you that close, that's worrisome. That really is. And of course, at that height, that's way too high for drones. which is a big problem with civilian and military aircraft, especially when they're at lower altitudes, either taking off or getting ready to land. There's been a number of encounters with drones, but those appear to be man-made types of objects. So unless a hobbyist has somehow managed to come up with a drone that can fly at 36,000 feet, we're going to have to categorize this as a UFO.
And it didn't show up on the radar scopes at all. They didn't get any activity at all that there was an object flying above this American Airlines flight, because it didn't show up on the radar. Am I correct?
That's correct. There was no radar, you know, indication. And you have to remember that all aircraft, both military and civilian, have pingers on them that will show up on any radar that's watching them, and the pingers actually will identify the aircraft, so that you know exactly what is out there and around you. And on top of that, there are free apps that anybody can get that will show you all the aircraft that are in the sky, at the present moment, not only over the United States, but anywhere in the world. And none of these apps indicated anything either. So, whatever this thing was, it definitely was an unknown object, unknown aerial phenomena.
Well, speaking about unknown objects, Tim, I wasn't aware too much of the Kingman, Arizona UFO crash scene, because a lot has been told about Roswell. I don't think there's too much on the plate for the Kingman, Arizona UFO crash.
That's correct. We really have to applaud Mr. Harry Drew, who has been the person who has been the one who has actively done the research on this strange case. Harry has lived a large portion of his life in Kingman, Arizona, and he's really been the one who has done the legwork and I have to say, it hasn't been just a one event. He has tracked down several crashes of some kind of unknown aerial objects that occurred outside of Kingman. Seems to be around the around 1953, when the majority of these crashes took place. And of course, now I'm not as familiar with all of the little details about this case as Harry is, but the interesting thing about these crashes is that each one, the military has been on top of them, within hours after they happened. So there is a very good indication that at least at that time, and maybe this was because of what happened at Roswell. If we take the Roswell incident at face value, everybody was really caught by surprise when this happened. So maybe by 1953, the U.S. military was a lot more prepared to deal with situations like this, and according to Harry Drew's research, that's exactly what happened. You had the military swoop in fairly quickly and gather up these crashed vehicles and any debris that was left behind fairly quickly, and move them out using big flatbed trucks as to unknown locations. I mean, there's been speculation on where these craft were taken to, but of course, there's no definitive answer. I mean, you've got people who say that it was taken to Texas or even the early Area 51, which was still pretty much just a desert with a few hangars at the time. One of the interesting cases about the Kingman incident is that there was one crash that created a forest fire in the area, and an ambulance crew actually found a couple of gentlemen who appeared to be perfectly human and took them from the site. They thought that possibly that these guys were part of a fire crew because of the way that they were dressed. And the sheriff in Kingman at the time actually was suspicious of who these guys were and put them in a cell in the Kingman courthouse, only to find a few hours later that these men had mysteriously disappeared out of this locked jail cell. And so, I mean, it's, you know, there's been more going on in that area than UFO crashes. And so, I mean, if people are really interested, and we've gotten a lot of response about the Kingman cases from people, you know, check out the book, because, you know, it's really a fascinating subject.
And wasn't there an atomic bomb blast pretty close to that area, and that might have drawn the UFOs to the area? Because from my recollection and my research, it seems like the UFOs are always attracted over some war-torn area or some sort of atomic explosion, and that might have made the UFO actually crash in Kinsman because of that atomic blast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in 1953, there was actually a series of atomic tests under the code name Upshot Knothole. Each one of these blasts had a different name. There was one that took place on May 19th, 1953. And according to Harry, within seconds of the blast, some sort of dark airborne object moving at an ultra-high rate of speed swept past to the east, traveling in a southerly direction, almost as though it came from the test site, tracking on a slightly downward trajectory and heading towards the mountains to the south. And this shortly afterwards, it was discovered that there was a crashed UFO in the area. Of course, naturally, it can't be proven that that it maybe had gotten too close to the atomic test or something along those lines. But it does seem to be, kind of a little bit above coincidence that this crash happened shortly after this particular UFO crash. And of course, the area itself had seen a number of flying saucer sightings. I mean, the local newspapers, were running headlines in May of 53, "Don't look now, but flying saucers return," "Objects noted in formation for a full hour." So it could very well be that because of the atomic tests that were going on at that time in Nevada, which was around 175 miles north of Kingman, by the way, that it was drawing in UFOs who were, for whatever reason, interested in these tests.
Well, I just looking back on my past notes, and a subject that never seems to go away is sightings of Bigfoot. And from your Bigfoot Stomping Grounds department, apparently the Travel Channel's expedition led an expedition to try and find Bigfoot, and they come back with a surprising DNA. and saying this DNA could be from Bigfoot or Sasquatch, and he seems to appear again all of a sudden back in the news.
Yeah, this is a fascinating story that has just recently come out, and you know, you have to remember this. This involves a television program, so you know we're going to have to be you know, somewhat cautious on what's being presented with this. But yeah, the this was part of the television show, the Travel Channel's Expedition Bigfoot, and they had discovered during filming in the wilderness of Kentucky's Appalachian Highlands a what appeared to be a structure made up of you know, tree branches and limbs and things like that. You know, it seemed to be intelligently, you know, put together out in the wilds and not just, you know, stuff that had fallen you know, from a storm or anything like that. So they went and did what was called eDNA, which was collected from soil under this structure. Now, this stands for environmental DNA, and it's a genetic material naturally left behind by animals in the environment. So, you know, you take a sample of the dirt, sample of water, and it gives you a really good snapshot of any living creatures that have been through that area. It includes humans as well. I mean, you can't go anywhere in this world anymore and take an eDNA sample and not get the presence of humans. So when they did an analysis of this DNA, it came back. Let me make sure I get this right for you. They said that what they found is very interesting. Yes, we've detected human DNA in these areas, but they also detected different primate DNA. There wasn't just one human primate. There were several different primates, some sort of primate relative that exist in the data, which means that not only was there human DNA detected, but there were some other higher level primate, several varieties of higher level primate that is living in the Appalachian area of Kentucky. Now, they said that Pan troglodyte is a species of chimpanzees, which we would not see in the areas, you know, of Kentucky. And they said it's a real head scratchers. So that they're looking at the Pan genus, or the chimpanzee genus, not necessarily chimpanzee, but something that you know, a primate within the, you know, the general area of chimpanzee, human, primate. So it's very interesting. As far as I know, there's no chimpanzees in Kentucky. But obviously there is some kind of unknown primate that's pretty close to humans genetically, but not quite human. So I'm really looking forward to see if any further information comes out about this, because, you know, if this is the case, this is really, you know, this is mind-blowing information.
Well, we're just about out of time, Tim. It's been a very compelling show. I just wondered, why isn't some of this released to the public, such as UFOs and other, not, I don't want to call them conspiracies, but facts that people should know, but certain entities like the FBI, CIA won't release to the public. I think we've been through enough now that a little bit of release of information would do us a little bit of good and take our mind off this stuff that's going on around us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, actually, this information comes out all the time. I mean, we wouldn't be talking about it on our show, mm-hmm, if it wasn't available. But, you know, what actually happens is that a lot of this stuff is just, you know, I mean, for most people, it's considered just really too wild, you know, to believe. And then, of course, you know, you have a lot of news and media sources that wouldn't touch this stuff with a 10-foot pole because, you know, I mean, for years we have been taught that, you know, there's no such thing as ghosts, no such things as Bigfoot, no such things as UFO. So if you get a story about, you know, like this one with the eDNA showing some kind of unknown primate in Kentucky, a lot of news organizations, you know, just absolutely refuse to do anything about it. Or if they do a report on it, they make a joke out of it. You know, you see that all the time, especially when it comes to UFO sightings. Television news, they still love to do stories about UFOs and run the X-Files music in the background.
Yeah.
So it's really going to take a lot of effort to try to get us away from that whole giggle factor when it comes to stories like this.
Well, we're just about out of time, and I could see that I'm going to probably order your book as well. It's 538 pages, I can see here. It's quite a big book, over 3.5 pounds.
It's a huge book. Don't drop it on your foot.
No. Can you tell the people out there website how to order this book and get more information about your conspiracy journal?
Sure. Well, all you have to do is just go to our website, conspiracyjournal.com, all one word. We've got the book offered there. You can also find it on Amazon.com. You just type in my name or Timothy Green Beckley's name, and that book and all the others that we've written over the years will pop right up. And I tell you something, you know, myself, Sean Castile, all of the other authors that have contributed to this book, you know, we're really pleased with the way it came out. And you know, it has, as you said, it's a huge book. There's just so much information out there that we have brought into this book that people really do, you know, they need to read this because it'll open their eyes to, you know, the things that are going on in this world they may not actually be aware of.
Well, thanks a lot, Tim. It's been a great show having you back on the air, and hope to get you on another future edition of Cosmic Horizons Radio. And I'm sure you release great information every week from your newsletter.
Thanks, James. I had a great time today. I hope your audience enjoyed it as well.
Well, thanks a lot, Tim, and keep safe and keep warm.
All right. You as well. Good night.
Thank you. You're listening to the Cosmic Horizons Radio program on the Blog Talk Radio system. Thanks a lot for listening and tuning in. Hope to see you again next week.
Conspiracy Journal is your number one source for the hidden world of the weird and strange. We bring you thought-provoking and controversial material for free-thinking individuals who are seeking what is really going on in our world today. Some of this material may adversely affect you. Other pieces are meant to enlighten. Either way, be prepared to be intrigued by such things as the reality of UFOs, ghosts, strange creatures from time and space, hidden conspiracies, time travel, Nikola Tesla, suppressed technology, and a whole lot more. You can find out more by visiting our website at conspiracyjournal.com. There you can sign up for our free weekly newsletter sent directly to your email address. Find out what they don't want you to know.